Radio Prague News.
The Czech Republic will not join the planned pact for the euro, Prime Minister Petr Nečas has said. The man charged with rape and murder of a 9-year-old girl has died of injuries sustained in a suicide attempt. And in a raid of fugitive Radovan Krejčí's South African home, police found a hit list with the name of a murdered businessman on it. The Czech Republic will not join the planned euro pact, Prime Minister Petr Nečas told Czech MPs on Wednesday. Mr. Nečas said the pact, which will be discussed at an EU summit in Brussels later this week, would open the door for tax harmonization, which would not be good for the bloc. The Czech Prime Minister also expressed reservations about the fact that the pact for the euro had been agreed among countries of the eurozone with no prior consultations with the Czech government. However, Mr. Nečas said the Czech Republic might join the pact at some point in the future. The pact for the euro, drawn up under pressure from Germany and France, should enhance the eurozone's competitiveness and ensure the sustainability of public finances in the member states. Otakar T., the 41-year-old suspect in the rape and murder case of 9-year-old Anička in Prague last October, died in hospital in the early hours of Wednesday. He was hospitalized in critical condition following his suicide attempt in a prison holding cell. The suspect was in care at Prague's military hospital and was being kept in an induced coma after suffering swelling of the brain. Otakar T. left a suicide note but never admitted guilt in the case. The suspect attempted to kill himself only a day after he was charged with Anička's rape and murder, after the police discovered the missing girl's body in the Prague neighborhood of Troja, near where she was last seen alive. The Czech Republic is set to receive 10.9 million euros, or 266 million crowns, from the EU's Solidarity Fund to help pay for damages caused by floods in August 2010, the European Commission said on Wednesday. The funds are earmarked for the reconstruction of infrastructure in northern Bohemia, the region worst hit by the flooding. The release of the funds is yet to be approved by the European Parliament and the Council of the European Union. The damages caused by the flooding are estimated at over 10.5 billion crowns. Czech MPs approved on Wednesday diplomatic status for representatives of the International Criminal Court in the country, a week after the measure was passed by the Czech Senate. Full diplomatic protection will apply to the court's president, judges and prosecutors. Czech Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg said the agreement will allow the courts to effectively pursue its mission. The Czech Parliament recognized the International Criminal Court 3 years ago after approving an amendment to the Czech Constitution. The new legislation allowed for transfer of certain jurisdictions to international courts of law. The building firm Stavo Energo has become the first company to be included in the public procurement blacklist of the Czech Anti-Monopoly Authority, its head Petr Rafaj told the news agency ČTK on Wednesday. The country's Office for the Protection of Competition said the firm counterfeited documents in a 225 million public tender in Northern Moravia and fined the firm 500,000 crowns. Any company blacklisted by the Czech anti-monopoly watchdog is legally barred from taking part in public procurement over the next 3 years. And finally, a brief look at the weather. The end of the week should see clear skies with occasional morning fog. Daytime highs will range between 12 and 16 degrees Celsius. My name is Jan Richter, and that's the end of the news.
Thank you for joining us. This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, with me, Chris Johnston. In today's programme, we look at the fallout from the sudden death of the prime suspect in a horrific child murder case. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. We speak to the organiser of a 1,000-mile bike race. And a little later in the show, stay tuned for a spotlight featuring the Acropolis, Prague's cool music venue, not the columned Greek ruins. That's all ahead. The only suspect in the case of Anna Yanatova, a 9-year-old girl who disappeared 5 months ago and was found murdered last week, has died in hospital after a suicide attempt in his prison cell, apparently bringing an end to a case that has shocked the public. The suspect, 41-year-old Otakar Tomek, maintained his innocence throughout the investigation. For more on the story, I'm joined in the studio by Christian Falvey. So, Christian, what exactly happened in the case?
Hi, yes. The suspect who the police arrested last week apparently attempted to hang himself on Monday using a pair of sweatpants tied to a toilet cistern, despite being under increased supervision and despite the fact he was sharing a cell with another prisoner. At first, it seemed he'd been saved. When the prison guard found him in his cell at 3 o'clock in the morning, but he was reported to be in critical condition on Tuesday, and shortly before 9 o'clock Wednesday morning, the military hospital where he had been transferred reported that he had in the end succumbed to brain swelling and died. Police have ruled out anything other than suicide, saying that the suspect's cellmate was a normal prisoner and had nothing to do with the death. Otakar Tomek also did, in fact, leave a suicide note, the contents of which haven't been made public, at least yet. The police have said that he does not admit to the crime in the note or to any other crime. He was actually awaiting a court decision on whether charges could be brought against him at the time of his suicide.
And so where does the case go from here? Is it all over?
Well, the deceased suspect has always been the only suspect in the case. So, as far as the investigation into his role in the child's murder and apparent rape is concerned, it's over. Obviously, you can't bring a dead man to trial. On the other hand, though, the investigators have already requested expert analyses of the evidence in the case, analyses of DNA evidence and probably DNA evidence in the autopsy report, fingerprints reportedly found near the grave, and whatever else may be available to them. And they're going to get those reports, which will either point solely to Otakar Tomek or to someone else's involvement. In the former situation, the case will be closed. In the latter, analyses could show that he was actually wrongly accused. It's important to note that no direct evidence has been found, or at least publicized by the police, in this case. And once already a court freed the suspect from police custody because of a lack of evidence. So it's still possible that someone else could be charged further down the road. And the case will develop from here depending on the results of the expert analyses.
And the case has been quite shocking for the Czech public, and people want to see justice served. Is the prison service likely to come in under heavy criticism for allowing the suspect to kill himself in jail and in custody? Was there anything they could have done to prevent it?
The prison service is adamant that they couldn't have done anything more. Cameras, for example, are not allowed in prison cells due to privacy laws, and the police say that they did have the suspect under increased surveillance in his holding cell. But apparently they were warned, they were also warned by experts and the suspect's own psychologist that he would be likely to commit suicide if pushed into a corner. He was also a jailbird. He had no crime record of child abuse, and in fact he had a daughter that was the same age as the victim. But the psychological details published about the man were rather damning, saying he was a psychopath. And he was no stranger to prison life, having been incarcerated some half a dozen times for lesser crimes, and even escaping once. But I'm sure the police will be quite heavily criticized, because, as you say, the public has been following this case very closely for 5 months. And I think I can say every parent in the country can imagine the pain of the victim's family. And at this point, it was starting to seem that the police had their man, and the full truth would eventually come to light. And that may now never happen.
Okay, thanks, Christian, there for the latest news on that case, which has shocked the Czech public. Organisers have announced that registration for a new extreme sporting event across the Czech Republic and Slovakia is complete. The first ever 1,000 miles Trans-Czechoslovakia. The race is the brainchild of extreme mountain biker Jan Kopka, champion and author of 2 books on racing in some of the toughest parts of the world. A little earlier, my colleague Jan Wellinger spoke to the racer on the line to his home in northern Bohemia. He explained how the idea for the Trans-Czechoslovakia came about.
It was a long way. I do extreme races more than 10 years, and I issued 2 books to these races. And these books became quite popular, and it brings me to not only to write about it, but to bring for people who are interested to bring a similar race.
To bring it here, to bring it to the Czech Republic.
Yeah, to bring it here too, and to do similar race here in Czechoslovakia. This race will not be so dangerous like races which I do in somewhere in Alaska or Australia or Costa Rica or somewhere, but should be adventures as well like all other extreme races.
How many people have signed up or how many people have registered for the race?
There are registered more than 100 people, but limit is less than 100. It means that now that list is closed.
Who is the race open to? I understand that it's not just for mountain bikers.
The subtitle is Human Power Race, My Own Power. Mostly there are bikers, but in this time we have registered one runner and one scooter.
And is it a mix of professionals and amateurs?
I think mostly not, but I think there are some, they do or did mountain biking professionally.
So it's mostly amateurs?
Yeah, mostly amateurs.
Now, what are the rules of this kind of race? Do you have to, for example, sleep outside or sleep just in a sleeping bag, that kind of thing? What are the rules?
Rules are that it's non-supported or self-supported race. It means there is no crew, there is no support service, and the race is non-stop race. It means that there is only start and finish, and what bikers bring or what people bring to the start, that's all what they have, and they have to survive and to ride bike with this stuff, and they have to survive with this stuff. So they can sleep outside, they can sleep in open air, they can sleep in cottages if there is a cottage there, they can sleep, they can do almost whatever, but no support from other persons.
How will organizers be able to make sure that someone hasn't taken a shortcut?
There is a certain trail or certain route, and they have to keep this trail and to use GPS, and at the finish we take the data from their GPS and then we check if they kept to the trail.
Was it important for you to combine Slovakia with the Czech Republic, so to speak, into one race?
It's not important, but it's stuff of my head, because when I was born, we were Czechoslovakia. We were just one state, no two states like it's today. That's why I feel myself Czechoslovak, not only Czech. So that's why I wanted to do this race across whole Czechoslovakia.
I imagine also that some of the terrain might be a little bit wilder in parts of Slovakia. Would that be correct?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's good because people should be able to survive in nature. And Slovakia has much wilder nature than we have in Czech. So I think that was also a good decision because of this, to do trail or race also across Slovakia.
And the race begins in Slovakia and ends in the Czech Republic. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. The first year it's this way, and second year will be opposite way.
How long or how quickly should the best competitors be able to finish the 1,000-mile event?
I don't know how good people are or will be on the start, but if somebody will be good, I think the fastest could be in 1 week in finish.
The race takes part at the start of July, giving racers 4 months to get in shape for the grueling event. Our weekly Spotlight programme next features the places in the Czech Republic that you should know, and if you're interested in Prague's art scene, cultural idiosyncrasies and unique nightlife, then you'll doubtless find yourself in Žižkov, and Palace Acropolis is the place to start. Christian Falvey looks at the night spot with a history in this edition.
Giving you a full taste of the phenomenon of Acropolis pushes the limits of radio. Its goodness is multi-layered. There's the rich old history of the venue and the one-of-a-kind position it holds in post-revolution Czech cultural life. Then there's its enticing griminess and underworldliness that can't but leave you with the impression that you've entered a secret Prague underground known only to a privileged few. Excellent. That feeling is, of course, entirely mistaken. every Czech travel guide there is registers Acropolis among its hotspots, and it remains a cultural epicenter despite everything that post-revolution entrepreneurialism has thrown in the same direction in the last 15 years. Amid all the music and cultural institutions that have risen and fallen in the last 20 years, Acropolis has held its own through some kind of unusual aphrodisiac. The recipe for that is an inimitable mix of acclaimed indie performances, unique interior art that makes an atmosphere that transcends trendiness, and the unabashed grunginess that befits a place that's there for art, drink, sex, and dancing, in whatever order you like. Acropolis director Lubomir Schmidtmeier and I agree that base ingredient is the symbiotic relationship Acropolis shares with its neighborhood, Žižkov. It's hard to imagine one without the other.
We try to have a close relationship to Žižkov, and really the majority of the people who work here are Žižkovites. We try to keep the two together. Žižkov was originally a very proletariat neighborhood, which started to change in the 1990s and kind of regenerate into a sort of Prague-Montmartre, for comparison's sake at least. More and more it is becoming a quarter where there are a lot of foreigners, lots of artists. I guess that's the best way to describe it.
Going back in time now, why Palace Acropolis? Because it's on a steep hill, for one thing, and more importantly, because when it was built in 1927 as an upscale middle-class residential building with a theater in its bowels, it was actually intended to be a center of cultural life for the big urban quarter that was changing as rapidly as it had emerged. In those early days, there would have been up to 430 seated visitors there, watching cabaret and amateur theater, piano playing, and the last silent films of the era. Acropolis was designed and built by a World War I legionnaire and architect, Rudolf V. Svoboda, for himself and other legionnaires. Svoboda built several buildings in Žižkov in the last days of Art Deco, of which Palác Acropolis is the best known. Once there was an interior full of romantic paintings celebrating the founding of Czechoslovakia, which was no longer customary in the late 1920s, but fitting for a bunch of veterans. Downstairs was a café famed for its excellent coffee, of which it served 14 types. The theater flourished, and its troupe included some of the best actors of the First Republic, who were just starting out at the venue, such as Zita Kabátová, Rudolf Hrušinský, and later František Filipovský. Jeroným Janíček is a well-known radio presenter who has also edited a book on the history of Acropolis.
Once Filipovský finished here, one of the subsidiaries of Supraphon moved in, and they were making needles for gramophones here. That went on for about 10 years, and then this became a storeroom for fabric, then a storeroom for potatoes, and it gradually just became an enormous rubbish dump. When Klima and Vorel cut the lock and went into Acropolis in 1989, they found not only a huge amount of junk, but also soggy walls, and they say the ceilings were collapsing. And today it's a gorgeous place.
To hrozilo skutečně propadem ty stropy. No a dneska to vypadá nádherně.
The old café at Kubelíková 27 became, after the war, a canteen for cheap meals for senior citizens, and later for the workers building the television tower around the corner. Luckily for Prague's wonderful artistic environment, it did not stay that way forever. In 1996, the interior of Acropolis was turned into a work of art by one of the country's best-known contemporary sculptors, the wildly inventive František Skála. Architectural historian Zdeněk Lukeš describes the interior of Acropolis.
Skála se hodně nechává inspirovat různými přírodními motivy, jako jsou...
Skála takes a lot of inspiration from all kinds of natural motifs, like forest driftwoods, for example, or items made out of wood that might not even have any function, but that are quite interesting. Here you have some kind of an aquarium full of strangely remarkable devices that I guess used to be parts of little machines, but we don't even know their original function. These kinds of things give a special kind of elegance, and altogether they combine to make a peculiar kind of mosaic.
další prvky, které skládá do takové zvláštní mozaiky.
With the Acropolis interior, Scala has made a kind of neo-Art Nouveau, Nouvelle Art Nouveau, perhaps you could say. And like I said before, it's one of the things that keeps Acropolis from ever going out of style. So many Prague publicans put so much money into making a place nice, and it's considered tasteless in a few years. So many of Prague's once wonderfully artsy joints, on the other hand, have vested their trust in a cool artist, who really was, and that, I guess, says it all. Acropolis has found a happy medium in Scala's subtle but subtly striking work. Like old Art Nouveau, the whole place has a feeling of having somehow grown out of nature, but instead of being amidst the forest and the tendrils, like in the 1910s, Acropolis is more like a dark but colorful bunker with roots peeking through to form bars and tables and faces on the walls. The mainstay of Acropolis for the young Czechs who come generation after generation and the steady flow of foreigners looking for Prague's cultural underbelly is the music.
Naší snahou je vlastně dodávat sem věci nebo uvádět tady věci, které nejsou.
What we try to do is bring in things that are not too widespread or that other theatres and clubs don't do much. We try to discover new things from abroad, and where the Czech scene is concerned, we try to support quality young artists who don't have support elsewhere. So those are really our main focuses.
To jsou takový ty hlavní záměry.
And that's a plan that has paid off, as culture journalist Marek Gregor says.
První je v jedné věci, že v podstatě jako první u nás.
One thing that Acropolis really was the first in the country to do was to work systematically with dramaturgy and bring attractive, modern, European music to the Czech Republic. The other interesting thing about Acropolis, even if it's not exactly my cup of tea, is that it was practically the first venue in the Czech Republic to start working with world music. Those are probably the two basic things in which Acropolis was the most sophisticated and through which it de facto defined the terrain for what goes on in the Czech Republic.
And what kinds of things you would never see at Palace Acropolis was a question I put to the stage manager, Michal Hons.
Michal David.
So pop.
He was never here. That's pop. Brutal socialistic pop. It was never here.
Otherwise, anything goes?
Acropolis is a place for all kinds of art, so here was everything that you can imagine. And it's great for this venue, because this is the power of the venue, because we are able to make a really, really nice and really different concerts, shows, performances, exhibitions, etc. As I remember well, we had here a snowboard ramp. It was from this side here. The snowboarders were jumping here. Bikes were here, etc. It's great.
And so, what do you like most about your job?
I'm here for the theater, but my heart is in the music. So for me, it's the music and the gigs of the great bands. It's beautiful. One of the best shows I saw here, it was Paradise Lost concert, Sepultura concert, Him was here, Apollo 440. Really great.
A stage eye view of Acropolis, sending that report there by Christian Falvey. Now we turn to our Czech language series, Soundcheck, with Daniela Lazarova.
Slečna Anna je za vodou, jsem sám s ruskou svobodou, a já pak nevím, co bude dál.
Welcome to another edition of Soundcheck, in which you can learn Czech phrases with the help of song lyrics. Today's song is by a group called Vanastovi Vieci, and the name of the song is Slečna Anna je za vodou, Miss Anne is over the water.
slečna Anna je za vodou, jsem sám s obskou svobodou, a já fakt nevím, co bude dál.
Být za vodou has two basic meanings in Czech. It means to be far away and safe, beyond the reach of justice, or it means you are set up for life and never need to lift a finger again. In the communist years, when someone fled the country, people would say, on je za vodou, or he's over the water, or on je za kopečkama, meaning he's over the hills. Být za vodou can simply mean to be far away and beyond reach, as Miss Anna is in the song titled Slečna Anna je za vodou. Have a listen to the phrase again.
Slečna Anna je za vodou, jsem sám s obskou svobodou, a já fakt nevím, co bude dál.
Today, when you say that someone is over the water, it can mean that he is beyond the reach of justice. For instance, it is a phrase that applies well to the country's fugitive billionaires, Tomáš Krejčíř and Viktor Kožený, who fled to the Seychelles and the Bahamas when the police started investigating them for fraud. In their case, the phrase has the combined meaning of being safe and set up for life. Miss Anna, on the other hand, is simply far away.
Slečna Anna je za vodou, jsem sám s obskou svobodou, a já fakt nevím, co bude dál.
Another way of expressing that someone is safe and financially well off is to say on je v suchu, meaning he is on dry land. If you say to je v suchu, it is on dry land, you are implying that some problematic situation is now under control. There are two other ways of expressing that someone is set up for life, both of them slang expressions. One is on je v balíku, meaning he's rolling in money, or you can also say on je ve vatě, meaning he is in cotton wool or in a safe protective cocoon. It is not quite clear from the song lyrics what Miss Anna's situation is financially, but it is obvious that the guy she left behind is in a bad way. Have another listen to the phrase Slečna Anna je za vodou.
Slečna Anna je za vodou, jsem sám s obskou svobodou, a já fakt nevím, co bude.
And that brings us to the end of today's sound check. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for learning Czech with me and naschledanou.
Slečna Anna je za vodou, jsem sám s obskou svobodou, a já fakt nevím, co bude dál.
If you'd like to comment on anything you've heard in today's program, then you can do so by writing to english@radio.cz. From me, Chris Johnston, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and goodbye.